Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Lauren Wolf, guest host of Prosody, and my guest today is the poet Catherine Wing. Catherine Wing is the author of two collections of poetry, Enter Invisible and Gin and Bleach. Her poems have been published in such journals as Poetry, The Nation, and The New Republic. Featured on the Writer's Almanac and included in Best American Erotic Poems and Best American Poetry 2010, she teaches at Kent State University and serves as the general editor for the WIC Poetry Center's Ohio Chapbook Series. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to Prosody.
Hi, Lauren. Thanks for having me.
So can you begin by reading us some poems?
Certainly, certainly. It's been a long, hard winter. Actually, this is the second winter in a row, as all certainly people in the Northeast, but people in Cleveland, and I think even people in Pittsburgh understand. And I keep saying, a la Game of Thrones, spring is coming. But I thought I should give the nod to the winter before we banished it entirely. So this is called The Darker Sooner. Then came the darker sooner, came the later lower. We were no longer a sweeter here, happily ever after. We were after ever. More was farther and further. More was the word we used for harder. Lost was our standard bearer. Our gods were fallen faster and fallen larger. The day was duller. Duller was disaster. Our charge was error. Instead of leader, we had louder. Instead of lover, never. And over this river broke the winter's black weather. So there's my homage to winter and all things dark. My mother once said, you know, she always wants to know what poems are supposed to do, you know, and or you know, so what really is what she says. But so I wrote this poem in part for her because I wanted a poem to really take on the challenge of doing something. So in this poem, we banish sorrow, or that's my attempt. Anyway. Hopefully it will work for some of you out there. It's called A Small Psalm. Sorrow, be gone. Be a goner. Be forsooth, unsooth. Make like a suit and beat it. Vamoose from the heavy, heavy. Be out from under the night's crawl space. Call not for another stone. More weight, more weight. Be extinguished, extinguish. The dark, that which is deep and hollow, that which presses from all sides, that which squeezes your heart into an artichoke heart jar and forbids it breathe, that which is measured by an unbalanced scale. Banish the broken, the unfixable, the shattered, the cried over, the cursed, the cursers, the curses, curse them. The stone from the stone fruit, let it be fruit. The pit from the pitted, the pock from the pocked, the rot from the rotten. Tarry not at the door. Jam not the door's jam. Don't look back. Throw nothing over your shoulder. Not a word, not a word's edge, vowel, consonant. But run out like the end of a cold wind, end of a season, and in me be replaced with a breath of light. A jack-o'-lantern, a flood lamp or fuse box, a simple match, or I would even take a turn signal, traffic light, if it would beat, beat, and flash flood like the moon at high tide. Let it flare like the firefly. Let it spark and flash, kindle and smoke. Let it twilight and sunlight and sunlight and moonlight, and when it is done with its lighting, let it fly, will-o'-the-wisp, to heaven. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, I thought I would, one of poetry's magical powers is that, or at least when it's really humming, is that it aims to hypnotize you in the way that a good fantasy novel does, or beach reading. So this is called The Evil Hypnotist Plans His Next Session. And it's best listened to with your eyes closed. So unless you're driving, I might suggest that. The evil hypnotist plans his next session. Imagine your head is full of angry bees. Your tongue is made of butter and has melted. You are made of butter. Now you are nothing but a stain on the carpet. Imagine, please. Your eyes are cocktail onions. They cannot see. Your lower half is planted in sand. The tide is rising. Imagine you are made of glass. You are a candle snuffed, a bubble blown. Pop. Don't breathe, please. You are an old pickle jar being filled with bacon grease, a head full of dust, crumbs on a table. You will be disposed of with a crummer. Be still. You are the hull of the unseaworthy. You are the husk of the cicada. The shell the snail abandons. You are the bed of a stream that's lost to drought. Imagine, please, a sandbag with a hole in it, a slow leak, a water balloon come undone, empty and nothing until you are dead. You are dead.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Catherine Wing. So, Catherine, I'm really interested in this wordplay that's going on in your poems. How do you come to write poems like that? Is that decision made before, you know, in the initial drafting process or mostly in revision?
Generally, I think I just am charmed and enchanted by the words themselves. So I would say that it's the poems are generated by the words, really. Like, in revision, you can revise towards something that maybe was there that you weren't aware of when you were writing the poem. But I don't think it would be hard, I think, to... I can read one which will seem like all wordplay, and then so it would be hard to kind of add that in post. But generally, I just think words are so strange and charming that it's hard for me not to want to play with them.
So do you usually start with this, like, enchantment or obsession with a word as opposed to, you know, starting with an image or a story?
Yeah, I think, so, you know, often a sound or a phrase. I do.
So does that come from everyday speech? Like, are you tuned to that when you're navigating every day, or comes from like what you're reading or listening to?
I think it comes from all of those things. Well, I'm trying to think if I can of a good example of I lived in southern Pennsylvania for a while, and although now that I've moved to Ohio, this seems also to happen there. But it was the first time I'd ever heard the expression "needs washed," you know, or "my car needs washed," you know, "my house needs cleaned." That grammatical syntax, which for somebody who grew up in Kentucky, is utterly, like, we would say, "my car needs to be washed."
Right.
And sometimes when I tell my students this, they don't even hear that it sounds strange to them. They just say, "Yeah, that's what you say. My car needs washed." I haven't written that poem yet, but like, that's something that the Darker Sooner poem is all about the comparative, right? You know, it's all about right? You know, it's later or it's lower or it's darker or it's sooner or it's louder. And that's
right.
And I have another poem which is a lot stranger and harder to...
It's interesting because it's sort of like what the sounds themselves imply and connotate.
Right, right, right.
As opposed to extrapolating connotation from specific words,
right,
or images, but it's like even down to the minutia of the sound.
Yeah, and I'd like to think that that could actually do something physically, like
I think it does, but I don't think that we're necessarily conscious of it.
Yeah, probably not.
It definitely triggers something.
You couldn't say that the sound, you know, gives people the hiccups or something. But,
no, but it's like this.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind. I kind of wish sometimes the sound could do yes. things very specifically in that way. Goosebumps, really. That's what I'm going for. But yeah.
I think it does. I think that people just aren't necessarily attuned to it. That's really interesting. Yeah. Can you read us some more poems?
Sure. I'll read you this poem that I wasn't going to read, but I will read it now because. We were supposed to play, I think the assignment for this was we were actually supposed to play with language, like puzzling sort of way. And it's called Riddle on a Nay Word. And a nay word, we're too sophisticated these days, right? We don't do this, we don't play this game anymore. But it was a game that children played, and maybe we do, so hopefully you can contradict me, but where... you know, like a bunch of little kids, or you all know what the word is. That's the nay word, but you can't say it, right? So you're trying to dance around it, and the first person who says the word loses the game. So you're trying to kind of get somebody else to say it, and not say it yourself. So that's the generating principle of this poem, and it's called Riddle on a Nay Word. Keep it, zip it. Don't utter a word. Not sure to what's referred. This equation doesn't sum. I'll jumbo mumbo chance and choke. The word's a code word, chum. Sing it as a butcher bird might hum. Or the stumbling mumbler who leaves the joke half heard, half ha ha, half Or the mummer from the dumb show, quite dumb, in a word, absurd. Or your mother, mummy, you're her third, singing sugar, 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 plum. A foreword and an after, one crossword in the works means gum. Between this catch and key, you're a blurred whirly bird and numb. Perhaps, though, the thoughts occurred, the word is mum. Mum's the word. So that one definitely came out of the kind of play element. I wrote that before I was a mum, and now I'll read this, that is a poem, this is a poem for my son, who is now two, but he was still in utero when I wrote this, so it's called My Sweet Also, for William. Soon, sweet, you will get up your anchor, and your thunderbolt will drop down the length of shore road. The moon will chip glitter into your eyes, and you will arise in the thicket of our world. Then slow will you come to understand the knuckle of time's business, the bell of clear sound, words and feathers, and the wind which carries them. You will learn the foot's bed, the fingers curl, the bed's wood. You will drink as a drain and dry my wine. Like an artichoke, you will grow your own heart and eyes. Your ears will spring from hearsay, and your teeth will rook. But sleep now, my sweet, also in your secret room, because soon the shivering will unlace us, and all must give you up to sun and moon. All right. This will be a little bit of a switch. So this poem is called Fine Point, and it's a poem about a pen. Writers, of all kinds, I think, have an obsession with, office office supplies and pens in particular. So I like a fine point, but I really don't. I sort of loathe the extra fine point. So it's like I have to have enough ink. I think too little is worse for me than too much. So this poem is called Fine Point, and it's about a pen. But other things too, right? The metaphorical pen. Fine point. Let's say you're the sort who puts out too much ink. The world around you is a wash, a blotting pad for what you think. Who's at fault? The blotch who failed? Thin paper to absorb your thought? Or the nib, pointless lackwit, who bears your doubt, not as a dribble, but a gush? All right. So this one is, lately I'm interested in studying, perhaps this goes back to whether the sound can give you the hiccups. I'm interested in studying how language functions in the brain. And in that kind of research, I've come across Area 25, and Area 25 is in the limbic brain, so it's kind of back right at the base of the spine, kind of right, I don't know, it's right where you want somebody to rub if your neck is sore. At any rate, they've figured out, they meaning the scientists, they figured out that that's where depression lives. So this poem speaks to Area 25 sort of as if Area 25 is doing all the decision making, which, you know, who knows? Maybe it is. Area 25. Hello, seat of my soul, light of my lights, instigator of my pulse to pulse. I'm embedded in your igneous rock. You're solid as a split pea pre-Cretaceous. You're the cradle of my me and mine. Just a little lentil at the summit and crown of the spine, junction of the head and neck. This is where I'm told to crow or sing or not. This pebble is what flexes my emotional pecs. Shocking. Miraculous. All these years we've been searching the lexicon for a soul, putting our bodies on the rack, only to find it's a slug living in the drainpipe of the brain. What a fuss for nothing. All that I have loved and love has come from you as an electric shot put, a brief volley of current and charge. In this election, do I even get a vote? Do you dictate every square inch from earth to moon to sun? Am I even now taking dictation? I know that heretofore my choices haven't always been good. But wait, were those yours too? You're no bigger than an ice cube melting in a bath of whiskey, but couldn't you lift me a bit above the hoi polloi? Next to you, I'm simple shadow, mere asterisk, and so I bow to you, little fiefdom of the limbic brain, Area 25, my neural liege, my synapse king.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Catherine Wing. So, Catherine, I'm interested also in this sort of rhythm and rhyming that your poems take on. There's a lot of true rhyme, which often seems like a no-no in contemporary poetry.
Right.
Right? Not that I'm saying it's a no-no. It's just sort of, you know, the shadowy.
Not very fashionable.
The shadowy, you know. Anthologizers of the world would say, don't do that. So I'm interested in how you deal with that.
I think it is. It's true. It's more generally viewed as not au courant. But the truth is there are a lot of poets. There are a lot more poets than you can imagine. Not all of my poems rhyme, for sure. And not all of them rhyme. I like to, as we've already talked about, like, I like to play with language, right? So not all of them rhyme, you know, in the Moon, June, Croon school of rhyming. You know, I try to teach my students about the off rhyme, you know, what Emily Dickinson is famous for, kind of the moon moan man. You know, there's all different, you know, there's any number of tricks that you can do. And I think for me, the rhyme one is serves as a generative device. It's helpful for me when I'm sitting down to write a poem to have it as a kind of basic constraint. But I also think that I don't know the man who wrote The Anthologist, Nicholson Baker, talks about in that book, he talks about, oh yeah, sure, rhyme makes it more memorable. So there's that, but he kind of dismisses that argument, and he just says, well, rhyme, you know, and this is true, I know because I have a two-year-old, right? Rhyme is how we learn to talk. And so it's old, and it's kind of evolutionary play, and I think it, one of my professors once said to me, he said, you know, if you want to sound like the giant, you have to play the giant's harp. By which he was talking about, you know, if you want to sound like the big guys, you know, Shakespeare and Keats and Yeats and, you know, Blake, and then you gotta play their harp. And I think in some ways rhyme is of interest to me for that reason too. Sometimes, you know, you write a poem and sometimes you're like, oh, it falls flat at the end, and maybe you need it to fall flat at the end.
I don't think particularly there's anything wrong with true rhyming in poems.
Yeah.
I mean, I learned about poetry through nursery rhyme.
Yeah,
so right. My mom made me memorize them and then took me to the doctor's office and said, look at how well my daughter knows all her nursery rhymes. And I had to repeat them everywhere we went.
Uh-huh.
And I still know them. So it's like you're attached to that initial comfort that rhyme brings.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you don't want it to be distracting or removed from the poem. So
right.
That's what all the critics now say.
Right,
you
know? Right.
But I think if it's done skillfully, as you do, I don't think it's an issue.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be an issue.
Right.
Or people shouldn't be afraid of it.
Right,
I feel like people are kind of a little afraid of it now.
I tell my students sometimes that it's like a chainsaw, right? You know, like if you know how to use a chainsaw, you can do some good things with it, but you could also cut off your arm. No,
right.
Pretty fast.
And so, it's an element of craft that I think we shouldn't ignore just because we're afraid of sounding sing-songy or we're afraid of being associated with, like, pop culture or rap music or something that scares people.
Right,
right. All right, can you read some more poems?
Sure. Now that we've had that big, long talk, I feel like I should read. Oh, my goodness. I'm gonna read a totally non-rhyming poem.
Just for that?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Or maybe I'll read the totally rhyming nursery rhyme. This is you know, the spring is coming. This goes back to that theme. It's a nursery rhyme. It's called Moth Hour. I was with a bunch of people at a residency, and one of them was looking for a Luna moth. She was a photographer or a filmmaker. She was going to put this Luna, a Luna moth had been reported in the area. So I wrote this poem to summon it for her. but sadly, it failed. So maybe that was because of the full rhymes. Moth Hour. Sing a song of oyster shell. My heart is full of green. Summon here a Luna moth with wings of velveteen. She has four eyes to fly with, two feathers for to see. She's sailing for a lover on a lamplit sea. Sing a song of sifted flour, dust and paper wings. My head is full of flutter. My mind is ripe with spring. Midnight's in the kitchen, boiling off the fat. The stars are in my window pane with Minnaloosh the cat. Sing a song of meadowlark, pocket full of rain. The wind is rising in the west. The weather's in the vein. The peacocks and the porcupines are waving their cocoons, but I'm waiting for my Luna moth to fly me to the moon. All right, so now that I've done that one, I'll do the one that, I can't say that it has no rhyme in it at all, but it's a prose poem, and it's called How It All Fell Out. They opened the emergency exit and sounded the alarm. The escape hatch opened in record time. The window they opened from the top down. They pushed the door open and they left it ajar. They opened the cupboards, they sprung the latches, they let their faucets drip. The chimney flue, the cellar door, these yawned open. They bought the car with keyless entry. They opened the lock boxes and the boxes that were unlocked. They opened their eyes, which had been blinking, and their mouths stretched as if to say, open. They were outspoken. They let the light pour through and the air pour through, and that which was neither light nor air they were open to. At the Cabaret Voltaire, they were the opening act. They opened vaults and coffins. They opened a funeral parlor and a bank account. A can of Dr. Pepper, a bag of chips, they opened. They opened card catalogs and dresser drawers. They wore their drawers openly. They opened his will and read it aloud. They opened her attachment and felt that it was strong. They opened a coffee shop when they wanted coffee, a gas station for gas, a bar for a bottle of whiskey, and then they opened the gin. Their collected John Cheever was open to the story, the sorrows of gin. They were unfastened, unbuttoned, unhinged, undone. His fly was down, but open, most of all. They were open. Already their hearts were loose and untied. The moon was no longer called full. It was called open. The tide was always high with its own open mind, and so they unlatched the night from the stars, which no longer shot, but went wide. I'm going to do a stranger one. This is the salesman in this pack of poems. It's called The Pitch. It's the story of a math genius posing as an imbecile, or the one where Porky is saved from the slaughterhouse by a woman who wears no underpants. It's the story of a rapacious weed that takes over the earth, of one-breasted Wanda falling in love with Jungle Jack. Ed Anger writes the story up. It's the story of a rash, and the story of a rash of deaths caused by a sea hag. It's the story of a woman who could not open her mouth, and a woman who could not close her mouth. Maybe they meet. Maybe they don't. Maybe they are the perfect couple. It is a story of a man possessed by his tattoo. It's an exclusive. It's a curse or a commandment. It's a commandment on cursing, which says, for God's sake, thou shalt not laze about on your chaise longue. It's a true story. It is the story of a man who talked his way out of credit card debt. It is the story of the sunrise on July 10, 2003. It is the story of a traveling shadow. It is an old man walking down the road story. It has a sculpted base to rest upon, which can be yours if you act now.
The poetry of Catherine Wing. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Lauren.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 FM.